AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Full Scale from Helena. Help soybeans reach their full yield potential with an efficient foliar blend of plant extracts and micronutrients from Full Scale. Democrat leadership in the House is hustling this morning, trying to line up the votes for both the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill. That's got everybody's attention. And so does taking aim at the climate. And so does a vaccine mandate for an estimated 84 million workers. We've got it covered on today's Free For All.
Live from one day closer to potential global extinction via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and your pal, Davis Michelson. Later, Dr. Joe Luck from the University of Nebraska. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis. Okay, so what you basically said at the start of your open there was how important two very small letters can be. You know, all those signs that guys used to carry as warnings, the end is near?
Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah. Now that's concerning. The end is nearer.
Yes, nearer.
Just means that it's another, nearer. Just means that we are one day further down the calendar, man.
Well, so, If the COVID doesn't get you, the climate will. So what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do?
Welcome.
Just do the best we can in the meantime.
Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We have got the free-for-all coming your way. And we are going to be making a trip over to Lincoln, Nebraska, University of Nebraska. We are celebrating, of course, the Farm Journal and U.S. Farm Report College Roadshow. Tyne was in Lincoln, Nebraska. Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report, was in Lincoln, Nebraska earlier this week. Collected some stories that are going to be on U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Very impressive stuff. And we're going to have some additional coverage to go along with that. The conversation that we're going to have today, it's very futuristic. This is not yet pulling the future forward. This is looking at what the future might look like in a year or two or 10, as far as crop protection goes. And precision ag. Looking at the future of it it's just wow. It is really, really fun. So Dr. Luck from the University of Nebraska is going to be with us at the end of the show today to talk about what that looks like. Okay, let's get to it. What you got in the news, man?
Well, Chip, the White House has requested Democratic senators meet with Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell before Thanksgiving, suggesting President Biden may renominate him this month. The Wall Street Journal reported that Powell was seen visiting the White House on Thursday. Powell's term leading the central bank is set to expire in February, and I feel like this could be a pretty big deal, a shift in the Federal Reserve chair.
Yeah.
Or
is
maybe
it
not.
Happen? Do you think it's really going to happen?
I don't know. It is curious Powell is meeting with Democrats. Yeah.
I don't think it will because it's been so much of a no change leadership role.
Exactly.
That I think that's probably what the White House is looking for.
Well, Chip, the House is hoping to vote today on both the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill and the 2,100-plus page Build Back Better package. The University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School assesses the Build Back Better price tag would increase to almost $4 trillion if its provisions are made permanent. But this just in from Wiesmeyer, we just heard it a few minutes ago. Moderate Democrats are reportedly asking for a Congressional Budget Office review prior to a vote here in the 11th hour. That's going to stall progress.
Oh, yeah. We'll find out from Jim exactly what the status is of the plan. And let's imagine a little bit what happens when the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better plan passes the House, which Jim, I think, is still saying that it is going to happen, if not today, eventually. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to imagine what's it look like after that. What happens?
Well, businesses with 100 workers or more will be required to verify all employees have been fully vaccinated or test negative for COVID-19 each week by January 4, senior administration officials have said. As many as 84 million people may fall under the new requirements.
This ain't going to we'll talk about it, but this is going to see pushback like we've never seen.
Global food prices are up more than 20% since the start of the year, a setback for consumers that is especially acute in developing nations still struggling to emerge from COVID-19 disruptions. A United Nations index measuring international prices of food commodities in October rose to the highest level since mid-2011. Saudi Arabia and its OPEC Plus allies put oil prices in the hands of President Biden, rejecting his demands for a large bump in production and leaving him the choice of whether to tap America's strategic petroleum reserve. After a meeting Thursday, the cartel did approve a 400,000 barrel per day output hike for December. The U.S. asked for as much as double that amount.
Well, you could, take the restrictions off and allow the pumping to start again, and you can have all the oil you need.
A bipartisan group of Midwest governors are seeking guidance from EPA Administrator Michael Regan on provisions of the Clean Air Act, allowing them to request the agency grant an exemption to reed vapor pressure volatility requirements for ethanol, which would once again open the door to year-round sales of E15.
Yeah. Yep, pretty important stuff there. That's one of the top priorities, and one of those things that we would certainly like to see available. Real quick, you got anything that we really need to get to yet, or should we get to Jennifer?
Yeah, let's move on. Let's move on.
Okay, let's get to Jennifer. Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning.
Have you recovered from the trip to Indianapolis and the FFA convention?
I'm not going to lie. I got home in that weekend. My daughter had a big sectional cross-country race on Saturday, and when all that was done, I thought, wow, I'm old. FFA convention took a little bit more out of this old mom. But it was really awesome.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I loved your article. We promoted it last week that FFA, you never really leave the organization. Your role just changes, and we promoted that last week. But let's talk about something a little more business-oriented, and that is the ongoing battle against ASF. What's the latest?
Well, an article came out this week from the Swine Health Information Center from Dan Rock at the University of Illinois talking about this new strain of ASF that they're seeing over in China. And so they have confirmed that there is a second virus strain present that is different than the one that they're currently building vaccines for and trying to find vaccine answers for. The tough thing about this one is that they're seeing that it's a low virulent version of this virus, and it means that pigs could be infected with these viruses and could be missed for a while in a disease outbreak because of the reduced virulence.
Yeah.
So it's such a transmissible virus that this is something that we need to really be watching for any possible signs, because they're just saying that it gets missed for a while and then more pigs get infected before they find
it. Got to really monitor hard to make sure that you can get that, identify it when you've got the problem. All right, Jennifer, keep us up to date on that. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. When we come back, let's get this free-for-all started here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
For a farmer, every day is different, and every season tells its own story. Make this the year you do it your way. Coron Metra is a foliar fertilizer that lets you decide when the time is right for nutrition. Metra gives you flexibility, it gives your tank efficiency, and Metra gives your crop more than just nitrogen. Coron Metra, the next evolution in crop nutrition. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration before use.
Pulling acres ahead of the competition is simple. Senex Maxtron synthetic diesel engine oils give you the smartest oil for the toughest conditions. These premium oils are formulated with EnduroVis technology and a balanced additive package to control deposits for a cleaner, more efficient engine that gives you proven durability. Enjoy watching the others follow in your tire tracks. Senex Maxtron diesel engine oils. Oil that runs smart.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Davis, we have got a lot to cover on this free-for-all. Thank you for sticking around for it. Take the handsome newsman anchor hat off and put on that landowner editor hat.
10-4.
We'll be calling on you for your insights from that perspective here. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jeff. Unfolding news, we hope. We'll see.
Right. We'll see just exactly what we end up with. And Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, great to be here as always, Chip.
You bet. Hey, Jim, let's just cover this here real quick because we had the jobs report out this morning for October. Non-farm payrolls increased 531,000 in October. It beat the estimate of 450,000. That's a nice beat, that, especially considering that it was such a miss and to the downside over the past couple of months. So that was a nice beat. The unemployment rate fell to 4.6%. Wages rose 0.4%, up 4.9% from last year. It felt like maybe the pulling back of the incentives to not go back to work is working.
Well, yeah, that, and you had a couple of other things, but you knew it was good when, President Biden just got through with the press conference in which he really hyped, some of the clearly, positive jobs report, and the financial markets like it because the equity markets are melting up. They're continuing their melt up, Chip. We've got the Dow up over 300.
Yeah, we do have. Yeah. It is over 300. That is impressive. One of the things that I think we also have to consider is that the fear, the concern, the worry about the Delta variant of the COVID virus seems to have waned a bit over the last month, and people are gaining a little bit more confidence to head back to the workplace. And now we get word yesterday, Jim, that the mandate that wasn't a mandate until now because OSHA's got the rules out on it, but those employers with at least 100 employees are now going to have to prove that their workforce is vaccinated. I'll just throw it out there. I'm vaccinated. I was willing to take it. That doesn't have any influence on your decision to do it, but I am completely against a mandate.
Well, so was President Biden initially, and then now he's come around to the opposite side, and we're seeing that frequently under the Biden administration, to be brutally honest here. It'll be thrown into court like everything else. I think the government has a right on government contracts and companies to do what they're doing. But boy, when you delve into this private industry just totally without government contracts, that's up for the courts to decide, Chip.
Right.
Well, and do I remember correctly that Biden was touting clear way back earlier this year that he was going to see a 70% vaccination rate by July 4th? Was his initial goal. And now here we sit at, I think the last number I saw was 58% of Americans fully vaccinated. Feels like he needs a win somewhere, it seems like. And maybe this is just him trying to get that. Yeah. Trying to force
it. Well, even Chip, you said we did get good news and we're getting good news on the downturn in the Delta variant. But look at Europe again. They've been a barometer of what eventually happens here. They're going back to additional record infections. So that's a little cause for concern.
Haney.
They definitely are. And we heard Scott Gottlieb this morning, who is, you know, he's the former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. He talked about by the time Biden's mandates come to effect potentially in January, the U.S. may be completely out of the of the COVID-19 pandemic. So that all of this mandate talk may be all for naught. Now, if he's wrong and it continues, as Jim said, Europe has been an indicator. Yeah. What role do these antiviral drugs play that Moderna and Pfizer are talking about? Are those viewed as vaccine replacement for the people that are uncomfortable taking the vaccine? And how effective are they? That's something also to keep your head up on.
Right. Right. The it's the simple fact that it's a mandate. And like you said, Jim, these are not government employees. These are private industry employees. And it is the government turning up the screws on the leadership of these private industries that it's at a minimum, it is an overreach of power and directive. And it feels really, really wrong to be happening in this country.
Well, and it also feels like it's becoming a states' rights issue. I was watching the governor of South Carolina, I believe it was, yesterday at a press conference, coming out very strongly against this, saying in my state, we're not going to have a federal mandate. And he's following other states. I think Georgia was the first one to kick it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but some of that too is it's good politics in some of those states to rail against the White House when it is, you know, a Democrat there. They might not be speaking as freely if it was a Republican in the White House. I guess, you know, can the US economy, can it afford to go through another highly, highly impactful wave? It could sustain it, but that's the challenge. And I don't know what the right way is to steer through.
And not only that, but what if the pushback on this is so severe that people leave the workforce again and say, listen, all right, I'll go find a job at some place that does not mandate a vaccination.
Yep.
There is a real risk that is going to happen as well. Jim, let's talk a little bit of state politics and your state politics. That was a heck of a result on Tuesday.
Major. You could feel it for weeks in this town. And I was telling anybody, I went to a couple, you know, school board meetings over the past month or so, Chip, and it was evident there that this state was very upset. Here's some bottom line, Chip. I get the question in my speeches a lot, when will Washington change? And I've told them, when we have one political party, a true minority party. I think the Republicans now have a chance at being the leader here for a generation because of the word you used before, overreaching. If you look at Virginia and you look at very Democratic state New Jersey, they're yelling at the Democrats that they're overreaching.
Right. Right. Yeah, the results there. We talked with Randy Russell from the Russell Group about that yesterday. He said it makes it a clear indication that in November of 2022 that the Republicans are going to take control of the House and probably gain 5, if not 6 seats in the Senate. Your thoughts?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It could be a major increase in the House, and that will begin the process if the Republicans don't do what they've done before and overreach themselves, then they'll lose it right back. But this is an opportunity here, from what we know now, that to really dig into and increase the majority that most people see ahead.
Now, we there's, like Randy Russell, a lot of discussion about the overreach and sort of this being a pushback against some of the Democrats being unable to contain and maybe handle a little bit some of the progressive members of their party. But Jim, isn't this typically what we see? Democrat president elected or whatever party, and then the next midterm, it swings back the other way. Isn't this just history playing itself out again?
Yeah, well, this time I think it's different because of all the woke aspects that we've seen, the tearing down of the statues. You know, how can you measure your country without knowing the progress that you've made and the educational battles that we have when all the parents kept at home during the COVID lockdown and saw what the schools were teaching. That's different this time. And that's why I think this is a fundamental change in the operation of our country.
Yeah. James Carville, who basically got President Clinton elected. Right, Jim?
Mm-hmm. It's the economy, stupid.
Right. It's the, 1993, and it's the economy, stupid. He said earlier this week that members of the Democrat Party need, there are not all, but there are members of the Democrat Party that need to go to woke detox, or or that party is going to continue to implode. And he see, you know, basically what we're seeing is not a recognition that of what happened on Tuesday night in Virginia in that governor's race. Basically, what we're seeing right now is a doubling down. We're going to talk about that next. There's a reason we haven't talked about the Triple B yet. It's because I've been giving them time to see if there's any developments. But we got to get to it next with Wiesmeyer.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Jeez, it's hard to pick where to start. Let's go ahead and start in the wheat markets, Brian, because that spring wheat market, after 2 days of a sharp sell-off, we've got a little bit of a recovery going.
Yeah, we found a bid in the market here mid-morning and pushing to the upside. Winter wheat markets have been slow in reacting, but you know, they have come off their lows in reaction, and so we'll see how it all finishes up. But, you know, when you look at those spring wheat charts, big pullback the past couple of days, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing more than just a normal correction in a bull market at this point from a technical standpoint. And so probably not too surprising to see buyers underneath the market.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the D spring wheat contract was already 18 cents off the session lows. But there it is. We've got pressure in the soy complex today.
Yeah, so soybeans, they gave up yesterday and just technically poor performance and dropped through the 20-day moving average, hit sell stops and extended losses from there. Seeing pretty active follow-through selling to the downside this morning. And so looks like it's going to be a poor finish to the week. Soy oil's under pressure. The meal market's under light pressure so far.
Corn's under some light pressure today, too. Looks like the cattle trade is finally starting to react to some improving cash fundamentals.
Yeah, we saw the cash market trade another $2 higher today. So feedlots dug in their heels, and they got the factors to bid up again. So that's the second $2 increase. One came earlier in the week, and then they did it again. So good, strong cash market and lending support to the futures this morning. And feeder cattle, they're up on live cattle and the weakness in the corn market. But hogs are facing a little bit of pressure here to close out the week.
Have a great weekend, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Free for All. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, Davis Michelson, and me, Chip Flory. I avoided talking about the Build Back Better plan and the infrastructure bill in the last segment, trying to give House leadership and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi some more time to make some progress. Jim, what's the status?
Well, at this juncture, the House Democratic leaders don't have the votes yet. And now we got word that President Biden is reportedly going to Capitol Hill this afternoon. He went up there the previous two times and didn't get what he wanted. I cannot imagine a third. But the latest thing, Chip, is Democratic moderates are insisting, unless they cave, that they want to see a Congressional Budget Office score of this monstrous bill. And if they hold their ground, you're not going to have a vote.
Right. How long will it take the CBO to get that done? It seems to me like they're probably working it continuously.
Yeah, but I don't see it today because you had the Budget Committee Chairman Yarmuth from Kentucky earlier this week saying it would take a week to 2 weeks. Now, usually when things like this occur, and House Speaker Pelosi is already doing those things, they bring out the Joint Committee on Taxation and they give their estimates. And she said, trust them. They've got the right direction on this thing. But it looks like the moderates are holding, as we see it right now on the CBO score. Republican Senator Graham from South Carolina came out last night on Fox News and looked direct in the camera to those moderates. And he said, if you cave, you're not going to be reelected in 2022 elections.
Yeah.
Oh, the nerve to actually know what something's going to cost. Just so so radical and ridiculous. It's just, oh, my goodness.
I love that. Yep. Oh, so, Jim, let's imagine that there is a vote and that the House passes the Build Back Better plan, the reconciliation bill, and the infrastructure bill. That means that the infrastructure bill, the physical infrastructure bill, will head to the White House. The triple B goes to the Senate. Doesn't that put the infrastructure bill in kind of a hostage situation where President Biden can withhold his signature on that bill until he gets what he wants on the triple B?
Boy, I think he would be pressured. I know that he'll be pressured to do that, but I'm telling you, he ought to take a bird in the hand. And that's what I think that's what some of these elections, this week said. So I think that he would sign it, Chip. I really do. He better not hold it hostage. And let's assume you're right that I do. I think eventually they'll have a House vote. I just don't know when it will be now again. Right. And it's going to be changed perhaps significantly once the Build Back Better goes to the Senate. What is the final verdict of Manchin and Sinema there?
Right.
Will they eventually vote for it? And if they vote for a bill, it's going to have to ping pong back to the House. And then what happens in the House? Bottom line, don't totally disregard what happens in the House, even if they pass it, but you have to see how it's changed in the Senate. It could still fall to defeat because of Manchin and perhaps Sinema. And that's going to take into December, no matter what they say about getting it out of the Senate before Thanksgiving. I just don't see it.
Yeah. Jim, earlier this week when you delivered, was it this week or last week when the benchmark for the framework for the Build Back Better plan was released? I'm losing track. You started working on a summary of it. And guys, let me tell you, I trust Jim when he starts putting, when he gets to work on these big bills and summarizes it, that he's going to pull only the stuff that is important. All right. The summary that Jim has done on this is 17 pages long and nearly 7,000 words. That's how big it is. It's crazy. And the kicker on this is that what might be most important for farmers is what is not in the triple B bill. It's astonishing to me. One of the we've got another question on this, and we need to address it again, and that is about the methane charge of $4,500 per head on beef cattle, $6,500 per head on dairy, $2,500 per head on hogs. Jim, that's not in there. It hasn't been in there for a very long time, but that's one of those suggestions that dates back to the Green New Deal and AOC's Green New Deal that has clung to this bill, isn't it?
Absolutely. And let's assume even if it were, even if that language was in that bill, Chip, mm-hmm. it would fall in the Senate because of a Democrat, Senator Tester. You know,
right.
He would not allow that in there. So, no, right. this is being hyped up. It is not going to be in there. They basically gone the approach of incentives. They want to take a positive approach by incentivizing those who want to lower methane levels.
Right.
And that's the way you have to go about it. We've talked lots about this carrot versus the stick when it comes to climate policy and agriculture. There's a lot of technologies being worked on to reduce the methane output of things like beef and dairy cattle. And then that's where the emphasis needs to be. If the government wants to, you know, look at how to make improvements in this area, that's where they need to focus, not on the easy, lazy, oh, we're just going to tax people, because that goes over really well.
Well, right. And the Biden administration has shown now that it's going to be willing to use trade policy to advance its climate goals. Higher tariffs on products with bigger carbon footprint, Sean.
Isn't that one of those lazy approaches? If applied inappropriately, it is, when you talk to experts on climate trade, and by the way, Chip, the U.S. is not the only country that has weaved climate policy into their trade activities. Mm-hmm. Canada and the European Union are no strangers to it. It is potentially a way to even the playing field with a country like China. When it comes to lower environmental standards, if you though apply it to countries that are really good trading partners and really are doing good things in the area of climate change, you're inappropriately applying them and potentially just raising the costs for consumers in your own country. So and where does the WTO fit in all of this? And if you want to use the USMCA as an example, if Canada, the US, and Mexico decide to start applying these kinds of policies on each other, what does that do to a trade agreement we just renegotiated? So there's a lot of questions in this arena.
Right. Jim, Secretary Vilsack is going to hold a farmside chat with Senator Stabenow from Glasgow, and they're going to talk about the Agriculture Innovation Mission for Climate. It's part of the COP26 meeting in Scotland. What's the latest on that?
Well, I hate to lower expectations, but I think it's just a message conference. I think this is just cheerleading for what a lot of loose ends on this stuff. But I'll keep on shouting from the mountaintop. I tell farmers, don't get too excited about all this carbon credit stuff until you know how to measure carbon and you know how to price it. And I still don't know the answers to those questions.
Haney, what's your take on what's happening in Scotland?
I think there's a lot of noise and not a lot of signal, to use some of Jim's frames of reference. But I think outside of the U.S. more so, we're very worried from an agricultural standpoint. The way that beef is portrayed, the way that, sometimes you have to do tillage, the way that tillage is portrayed, it's a real concern, because what happens is a government like, I'll use my example of Canada, they go to this and, this sounds great. Everyone's trying to up each other by being net zero by this afternoon, and no real plan on how to actually make it all happen. And agriculture really is one of those pinpoints, because they don't understand it. They say, we got to fix these cows. Tell people to eat less beef. That's how we fix this. And it's crazy ideas like that really concern us in this country.
Yeah. Well, Davis, this is something that we have talked about many times on AgriTalk. It's pointing at a destination without any way of getting there right now.
Right, right. Aspirational. I've talked about it before. getting back to the climate conference too. I mean, the hypocrisy of the carbon footprint of the attendees rolling up in their private jets, the motorcade that Biden brought along with him, 85 cars in his visit to Rome. And then we're all supposed to take these measures, eat less beef. What are you doing with 85 cars? Get a couple of guys in a Chevy van. You're fine. The carbon footprint is even, I don't care what year it's from. You don't need 85 cars. Come on, guys. And yet we're all supposed to take these extraordinary measures.
Davis makes a good point, Jim. The optics on this stink.
Yes. You wonder if they were electric vehicles. I guess not.
Yeah. And how do you get them there?
Well, if they were, you know, they'd be telling us. They'd be waving the electric vehicle flag.
You bet.
The Canadian delegation alone was 300 people.
The U.S. delegation was 800 and some.
And it's growing. A lot of pomp and circumstance.
And growing because House Speaker Pelosi is going there next week. And she's probably going to want to have something in her hand that she can wave in front of everybody and say, look at what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's why be there until this weekend to get something, Chip. They'll delay this. If they don't have the votes, they're going to do it this weekend.
All right, you guys, great job today. We're going to head to Lincoln, Nebraska next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Golden Harvest. Learn how Golden Harvest is changing the game in corn and soybean products and providing service to farmers by visiting goldenharvestseeds.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We had cut the free-for-all a little short today so that we can jump on the Farm Journal, U.S. Farm Report, College Roadshow. Head on over to Lincoln, Nebraska for a conversation today. And joining us right now is Dr. Joe Luck. He is Associate Professor of Biological Systems Engineering and a Precision Engineer from the University of Nebraska. Dr. Luck, hey, thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
Morning, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Glad that you are here. There's another line to your list of responsibilities. You're the Associate Director of the Eastern Nebraska Research Extension and Education Center. Tell us about that research center.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chip. That's a new line in there. The NREC facility actually kind of encompasses, there's four different locations kind of from central Nebraska to the east. The largest location is the one there just outside of Meade, Nebraska. It's just over 9,000 acres.
Wow.
And it comprises operations from what we would consider a kind of state-of-the-art row crop production system that's about 2,500 acres. There's the wheat breeding program, foundation seed. Our agronomy unit has a large research presence there. We have the feedlot innovation center that's increasing in size there. That's, you know, pretty much production scale on the beef feedlot side. And then most recently, the addition is our advanced phenomics center that uses the SpiderCam to measure crop performance. You know, in season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that
huge,
is very
huge
cool.
Facility, a lot of diversity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is very cool. And that SpiderCam, is that part of the robots that you're testing? And are you testing the crop protection robots there at the research center?
So that's one. Yes, that's one piece of kind of what we're considering our Farm of the Future concept. So my colleague, Dr. Santosh Pitla here, ag field robotics is kind of his specialty area, and that's exactly right. You know, one of our goals is, we have this SpiderCam system that tests, you know, very detailed imagery to try and gauge crop performance on a small area. You know, the question is how do we expand that over broader field areas? And that's one of the things Santosh is doing is, you know, he's using his autonomous ground robot that can basically house the same sensing elements and calibrating it under that system that maybe in the future could be put out on our broader acre system.
Yeah. The SpiderCam technology Dr. Luck, it just fascinates me. How sensitive is this? Because I've heard some talk, some reports, read some information that it can determine plant health. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly one of the things that they're looking at. You know, we know that spectral imagery, so the reflectance of the crop image, it can give us information on nitrogen status. It can give us information on water status. And the hyperspectral systems they use is basically giving us extremely detailed, high-resolution imagery across that electromagnetic spectrum, the visible light that you and I see all the way through the near-infrared that's invisible to us. And absolutely, it gives extremely detailed information. And one of the areas I'm highly interested in working is the nitrogen management. So putting that type of data to use to drive nitrogen management only when it's needed by the plant.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So where do you think you are in the development of these plant health robots?
Yeah, that's a great question. Dr. Pitla works in this area. We're actively trying to deploy some of these systems now. So really, it just comes down to we're already doing it with some of the high clearance application equipment that we use in our research program and we use at the farm. You know, having sensors on board to drive the nitrogen management decision. We're using satellite imagery and also using imagery from unmanned aerial vehicles or drones. And we're testing that in season. We're hoping within the next year or two, we'll actually be demonstrating that same technology on a small robotic application unit that could be out in the field doing this on its own. So that's our goal.
This freaks me out. How long do you think it is until we're driving down I-80 through central Iowa, central Nebraska, and looking out across fields, and these fields are dotted with these robots?
Yeah, it's probably sooner than we think. I mean, there's industry partners like Raven. I don't know if you follow that.
Recent
acquisition of Dot. They've renamed that Omnipower. I know they've got one of those units at a co-op located out a little bit further west in Nebraska. Those are commercially available today. And so I think we're a lot closer than we think. And certainly from the aspect of, we're not necessarily hoping to replace farm labor, but as we know, there are pressures on labor. We know the timeliness of getting these applications in the field is critical, not just for the optimizing crop growth, but minimizing environmental impact. I think it could be sooner than we think. I wouldn't be surprised in the next 5 years if we don't, 5 to 10 years, we don't start to see more of that. So
yeah, minimizing the environmental impact. That's another one of. I mean, that's another incentive that is increasing in importance and pushing this technology ahead, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's some of the work that we're trying to do now is really look at this as a systems approach. So how can we help farmers to, almost develop what you might call like a net zero operation? You're utilizing all that nitrogen. You're not losing it to the atmosphere. You're not losing it to the groundwater. You're putting practices out that are helping with, carbon sequestration. A lot of these things that are going to be, again, great for the environment and have the high potential to get worked right into these production systems. And really, we're seeing a positive economic opportunity from some of these advanced nitrogen management tools. So in a lot of ways, it could increase, economic profitability for farmers. So
that's so awesome. We are going to keep track of this. That it's so interesting. Hey, good luck with Ohio State tomorrow.
we got some friends coming out to see the game, so we're going to do our best. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your time. That is Dr. Joe Luck from the University of Nebraska. Come back this afternoon.